College Football Nerds here talking Baylor and Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State had a huge win Saturday against Oklahoma, kind of getting that monkey off their back. And now they're looking to maybe, Josh, barrel on into the playoffs if they can get a win against Baylor this Saturday. So just want to let y'all know, for if there's new faces here, we got a couple of things of homework that we give you every time in the comments. We need your score predictions so we can get down there and talk about how wrong you are, how right you are. And you can tell us how wrong we are too. That's okay. Also, while you're down there, subscribe, like, helps us out a lot. And you're going to want to see more content from us, especially if Oklahoma State makes the playoffs. Josh, you made a pretty good point when you did our top 10, or we did our top 10. You mentioned about Baylor because you still had them in there. And you're like, I don't like to punish a team when they have an injured quarterback, especially if they win the game, even if it's ugly or whatever. They have an injured quarterback. I want to wait and see how that team fares down the line before I completely write them off, even if they do lose. And I think that's a totally fair approach. We saw this in the past with like Trevor Lawrence when he had to come in and he got hurt. I think Watson got hurt, and then Clemson still ended up winning a national championship. So I think that's a fair approach. But I'm curious in terms of like what you saw in Texas Tech Saturday, or the Texas Tech game Saturday, and what you saw when Bohannon went down against Kansas State, and you've got this coming off the bench fill-in situation at quarterback. If Bohannon can't play Saturday, is it a completely like game over situation, or does Baylor still have a puncher's chance?
One of the more interesting things from the first Baylor game is they ended up falling into one of these weird statistical chasms we talk about with teams that like to run their quarterback a lot. Bohannon had 27 attempts and 9 carries. 27 attempts for 6.4 yards per attempt. 9 carries for 1.4 yard per carry. And I know that factors in sacks because college football is dumb. But you ended up in a situation where Bohannon was averaging, quick, dirty math here, somewhere around 4.5 yards per play for plays that he was directly responsible for. And at the same time, Abram Smith had 97 yards on 10 carries, 9.7 yards per carry. Now, there's a 55-yard long in there, but even without that, 42 yards on the other 9 carries is still a pretty respectable 4.5 yards per carry. The problem is, when you have a running quarterback, every carry he gets takes a carry away from the running backs, and then he throws the ball, and a lot of times you end up in a situation where the backs really don't get any touches. And I think maybe in a way it was almost a bad thing because, and we saw this a lot with Jalen Hurts, and we talked about that a lot when Hurts was running the show at Alabama, and even a little bit when he was at Oklahoma. You end up in this situation where if the defense can key on the quarterback and just say, we're going to attack the quarterback, you can kind of let the running back go off a little bit. And it's okay because it's only going to be like 10 plays in the entire game. And when you had a game where the play disparity last time got to 82 plays on one side to 56 on the other, it really, really snowballed, I think. So in a way, if Bohannon's not out, the one thing I will say is it might kind of force them to be a little more balanced with how they distribute the ball between the backs and the receivers and the passing game. And that could be something of a positive. But the real reality to this game, and correct me if I'm wrong or you disagree, Daniel, it's always a little bit of a killjoy in the Big 12 because in the current format, every Big 12 game is just a repetition of a regular season game. So the bummer here is I don't have a lot of like novel insights of how these teams compare because you've already seen it happen. But the positive, at least, is that the Big 12 does have a season where every team has played every other team, and these two teams factor into the data points. So from a modeling perspective, you have total connectivity of data between the conference, including these two teams, and our model has the ability to be, at least in theory, probably more accurate than any other conference at any time in history.
Yeah, and it's a double-edged sword for sure. We've sort of complained about this in the past, and not in a, like, it's bad for college football or it's bad for the league. It's just as fans, sometimes rematches aren't that as exciting, especially we're in SEC country. We watch every major important and a lot of non-important Big 12 football because we're college football fans, right? So we're not fans of Baylor. We're not fans of Oklahoma State. So we do like the novelty of non-rematches, but we also, like you said, there is some predictability baked in there. And just on its face, the concept of having a conference where everyone plays one another is a good thing. It's not a bad thing. I do wish they played a little more, a couple more out-of-conference games against Power 5 teams, but that's a different story for a different day. In terms of playing one another, that round robin is actually really cool, and I like that for the sport. Now, to your point, and to, you know, like, I do think that it's kind of frustrating when you do have a quarterback that sort of hoovers up all those snaps and all those plays. I think Bohannon's going to play Saturday. I don't know. I don't know if they've said if he's hurt, if he's not coming back. I think he dressed last week and probably could have gone in. So he's probably going to play. I don't know that there's a huge drop off. And I think it may be a slight advantage for Baylor to come in with something that's a little bit of a different approach than the one that didn't work against Oklahoma State the first time. All right, so let's get into the model, and I want you to contextualize the model and what we see in these numbers with what we were saying about Oklahoma State's defense last week. Because, Josh, we were gushing about this defense. We got a lot of heat in the comments. We said Oklahoma State's defense, from a number standpoint, looks around Georgia's, you know, level, and people were killing us for it. But I think to this point in the year, their defense has proven to be really good. Talk about what you see defensively in these numbers and if maybe the game against Oklahoma impacts or adjusts those in any way.
Oklahoma State defensively probably has one of the most underrated units in the country, and that's allowing 62% of opponent rushing averages. And we're also covering, for example, the Big Ten Championship and the SEC Championship. If you're interested, you should watch those videos. 62% of opponent rushing averages at Oklahoma State. Michigan and Iowa are 86% and 73% respectively, and those are teams that are considered to be great run defenses in the Big Ten. The SEC, Alabama 61%, Georgia's 55%. So really, Oklahoma State is just a notch better than Georgia, even with Alabama, which some people might turn their nose at, but we spent a lot of time talking about how Alabama's problem is totally pass defense, where they're in the 90% range. Their run defense is way better than anybody's given them credit for, and Oklahoma State is in the same ballpark. Only the pass defense is actually quite good. So Oklahoma State defensively, we felt like was going to present problems for Oklahoma last week. We talked a lot about it. There's a reason that I picked Oklahoma State to win that game. And when you look at the, you know, just like the box score of the Oklahoma game, I think it kind of confirms a lot of it. Because, yeah, Kennedy Brooks had 22 carries for 139 yards. But Caleb Williams had 19 carries for 36. And that was with a 56-yard long. So on 18 carries, he had negative 20 total yards. It was clear that Oklahoma State's run defense was so good that they were essentially able to just key everything on Caleb Williams, allow Kennedy Brooks to get 6 yards per carry, which is good, but not enough to necessarily break you by itself. And outside of one 36-yard long, about 5 yards a carry, so not necessarily lethal. And then by just stopping Caleb Williams, that was enough to win the game. Here, you kind of have a different dynamic, because Baylor comes into this game averaging 5 yards per carry, 7.9 yards per attempt. They're a team themselves that allows 77% of opponent rushing averages, 98% of opponent passing averages. And that latter point is important, because Oklahoma State's run defense matches up very well with Baylor's strength. That 5 yards per carry drops to about 3.1 yards predicted per carry. Oklahoma State isn't expected to run the ball great either. They're expected to get about 3.4 yards per carry. But it's the passing game, and it's due to the defenses in this game. Baylor's pass defense is straight average. And in fact, when you consider the fact that there are out-of-conference games being taken into account here, that 98% number is really below average because you've got some inflation. And that means that Oklahoma State is absolutely expected to get theirs. They're expected to get close to 7.5 yards per attempt, whereas Baylor is still expected to be pretty limited to 6.3. And you get about a 5 yard per play to about a 4.5 yard per play advantage, 27 points to 20. And I think it's a little bit like what you saw in the original game. It's 24-14. From a team stat perspective, Oklahoma State had 24 first downs to only 10 from Baylor. That's a pretty big differential. But I think the more sort of notable aspect to it was like passing 173 yards to 182. It was the run game that accumulated yards for Oklahoma State. Both teams at 3.7 yards per carry, but because Oklahoma State, weirdly enough, was about 1.5 yard per attempt better than Baylor, I think, in sort of the way that the carries and the pass plays worked, Oklahoma State sustained drives at a far better clip. That sustaining of drives turned into points. It turned into a Baylor team that was a little tired. Oklahoma State was able to put up 10 points in the final frame and put the game away. And so I think that's the story here again, or at least that's the story on paper. The point per play differential isn't that high. Our model actually has it about, I'll say it's actually about 6.4 points different. It gets into the decimals the way it gets calculated. I know the spread in this game, and I was looking at it earlier, is -5 Oklahoma State, not that far off. So it's basically a game where we talk stall points and break points. Baylor isn't quite good enough to move the sticks running or throwing. Oklahoma State has just enough passing offense that they can generate some first downs. And that differential will start to add up in drive count and in play count. And that gives Oklahoma State a little bit of an edge in a game where, per play statistically, it's actually pretty close.
And it's interesting to me because the one place where Oklahoma State and Baylor diverge this year is the game against one another. Everything else, Baylor has enough in their ledger that shows that they're on par with Oklahoma State and vice versa for Oklahoma State in terms of common opponents and how they played throughout the year. It's interesting that we've got a 27-20 score here. We've got a pretty tight point spread in this game. And we had a double-digit win for Oklahoma State in the original matchup. Now, one thing that models don't really see or care about that maybe Vegas cares about is home field advantage. And that could have played in a good bit in a really low-scoring game, 24-14, where there's a lot of variability. That could have played in a good deal in terms of that final score, where one play here or there, and you've at least got a score difference, but maybe even more. And that was a 14-17 game with, what are we saying, like 2 minutes left in the game. So that was a tight game all the way through. I think that Oklahoma State found something offensively against Oklahoma, though, Saturday, and found something in their gut that they were down in that game, and you noted in our live show that they were down in that game in a way that could have been frustrating to them because they were far outplaying Oklahoma, and the score didn't reflect that, and they were down, and they just kept chopping wood. I hate that analogy or phrase, but it's true. That's what they did. And I think they found something in that game, and that's a little intangible and for a numbers guy, not great. But I'm going to go ahead and give my score here. Give me Oklahoma State 27, Baylor 20.
I was debating whether I was going to actually do this, and I'm going to do it. It's the third time in three videos where you've picked the same stupid score that I picked. And it's the model score. This is the one time I was going to go with a model, and I was going to say 27-20. And I'll just stick with it. And I think the model is right. I think, you know, this is football, and people talk about model and the model being wrong. Look, the model and our predictions are never going to be 100% right all the time, or I would be on a jet ski somewhere in the Bahamas right now. Well, the best we can do for you is give you an idea of what the median outcome is. Not even necessarily the mean, but the if you played 10 times, this is probably the one in the middle. But a lot of results can happen, and we're in that mid-20s range where weird things swing. I think at the end of the day, the quarterback injury to Baylor has been pretty damaging. The yard per play number, or yard per play numbers in general, fell off quite a bit the last few games as a result of that. In particular for Baylor, that Kansas State game was the lowest yard per play number of the entire season. And it was the lowest yard per play number since, oddly enough, the Oklahoma State game at 4.9 yards per play. And I think that's just kind of a bad sign. I do think the reason you were talking about with the outliers and why things are the way they are, it's pretty simple. In the Big 12 rush defenses, Oklahoma State is allowing 2.8 yards per carry. The next best team, Iowa State's allowing 3.6. In fact, between Iowa State and West Virginia, that's the second, well, I'll actually say Iowa State and number 7 Texas Tech and run defenses in the Big 12, you're between 3.6 and 4.1 yards per carry. It's about a point, half a yard per carry difference. And the gap between Oklahoma State and Iowa State is 8.8 yards per carry, about the same gap as Texas Tech all the way down to Texas, who's about the next one. So it's just Oklahoma State is particularly good versus the run. Baylor is particularly reliant on the run in a way that few teams in the Big 12 really are. Everybody likes to run it, but Baylor in particular. And so this matchup is just really difficult for Baylor, and it makes it very unlikely they could win. Baylor has been able to set up for the Oklahoma State game more than vice versa. I think that does give them an advantage. I think that's why this game is only a 5-point spread, honestly. But I still think at the end of the day, the matchup situations, the questions and marks at quarterback, here talking on Sunday when we really don't know, I think all that is enough to give Oklahoma State an edge. No result is going to shock me in this game. And I think it's the most unpredictable of all the conference championship games that we're covering. Not surprising since it's the lowest spread, but I think it's even more unpredictable than that. But I do agree with the model on this one, at least on paper.
All right, well, that's it for us for Baylor and Oklahoma State. Again, let us know in the comments what you think the score is going to be. And if you want to listen to us talk for almost 2 hours, you can check out our live show that we did on Saturday night. We'll be doing another one this coming Saturday for sure. Thanks so much, y'all. Have a great week. God bless.